ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Nectar Devotion 21, Qualities of Sri Krishna. Personal features can be divided into two. One feature is covered and the other feature is manifested. When Krishna is covered by different kinds of dress, his personal feature is covered. There is an example of his covered personal feature in Srimad Bhagavatam in connection with his Dwarka Lila, his residence in Dwarka as its king. Sometimes Lord Krishna began to play by dressing himself like a woman. Seeing this form, Uddhava said, "How wonderful it is that this woman is attracting my ecstatic love exactly as Lord Krishna does. I think she must be Krishna covered by the dress of a woman." One devotee praised the bodily features of Krishna when he saw the Lord in his manifested personal feature. He exclaimed, "How wonderful is the personal feature of Lord Krishna! How his neck is just like a conch shell! His eyes are so beautiful as though they themselves were encountering the beauty of a lotus flower. His body is just like a tamal tree, very blackish. His head is protected with a canopy of hair. There are marks of Srivatsa on his chest, and he is holding his conch shell. By such beautiful bodily features, the enemy of the demon Madhu has appeared so pleasing that he can bestow upon me transcendental bliss simply by my seeing his transcendental qualities." Srila Rupa Goswami, after consulting various scriptures, has enumerated the transcendental qualities of the Lord as follows. 1. Beautiful features of the entire body. 2. Marked with all auspicious characteristics. 3. Extremely pleasing. 4. Effulgent. 5. Strong. 6. Ever youthful. 7. Wonderful linguist. 8. Truthful. 9. Talks pleasingly. 10. Fluent. 11. Highly learned. 12. Highly intelligent. 13. A genius. 14. Artistic. 15. Extremely clever. 16. Expert. 17. Grateful. 18. Firmly determined. 19. An expert judge of time and circumstances. 20. Sees and speaks on the authority of Vedas or scriptures. 21. Pure. 22. Self-controlled. 23. Steadfast. 24. Forbearing. 25. Forgiving. 26. Grave. 27.
Self-satisfied.
28. Possessing equilibrium. 29. Magnanimous. 30. Religious. 31. Heroic. 32. Compassionate. 33. Respectful. 34.
Gentle.
35. Liberal. 36. Shy. 37. The protector of surrendered souls. 38.
Happy.
39. The well-wisher of devotees. 40. Controlled by love. 41. All auspicious. 42.
Most
powerful. 43. All famous. 44. Popular. 45. Partial to devotees. 46. Very attractive to all women. 47.
All
worshipable. 48. All opulent. 49. All honorable. 50. The Supreme Controller. 50. The Supreme Controller. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has all these 50 transcendental qualities in fullness as deep as the ocean. In other words, the extent of his qualities is inconceivable. As parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, the individual living entities can also possess all these qualities in minute quantities, provided they become pure devotees of the Lord. In other words, all of the above transcendental qualities can be present in the devotees in minute quantity, whereas the qualities in fullness are always present in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Besides these, there are other transcendental qualities which are described by Lord Shiva to Parvati in the Padma Purana and in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in connection with a conversation between the deity of the earth and the king of religion, Yamaraj. It is said therein, "Persons who are desirous of becoming great personalities must be decorated with the following qualities: truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, perseverance, renunciation, peacefulness, simplicity, control of the senses, equilibrium of the mind, austerity, equality, forbearance, placidity, learning, knowledge, detachment, opulence, chivalry, influence, strength, memory, independence, tactfulness, luster, patience, kind-heartedness, ingenuity, gentility, mannerliness, determination, perfection in all knowledge, proper execution, possession of all objects of enjoyment, gravity, steadiness, faithfulness, fame, respectfulness, and lack of false egotism. Persons who are desiring to become great souls cannot be without any of the above qualities. So we can know for certain that these qualities are found in Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul. Besides all of the above mentioned 50 qualities, Lord Krishna possesses 5 more, which are sometimes partially manifested in the persons of Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva. These transcendental qualities are as follows: 51, changeless; 52, all cognizant; 53, ever fresh; 54, Sakchidananda, possessing the eternal blissful body; and 55, possessing all mystic perfections. Krishna also possesses 5 other qualities which are manifest in the body of Narayan, and they are listed as follows. 56, he has an inconceivable potency. 57, uncountable universe generate from his body. 58, he is the original source of all incarnations. 59, he is the giver of salvation to the enemies whom he kills. 60, he is the attractor of liberated souls. All these transcendental qualities are manifest wonderfully in the personal feature of Lord Krishna. Besides these 60 transcendental qualities, Krishna has 4 more which are not manifest even in the Narayan form of Godhead. What to speak of the demigods or living entities? They are as follows. 61, he is the performer of wonderful varieties of pastimes, especially his childhood pastimes. 62, is surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love of Godhead. 63, he can attract all living entities all over the universes by playing on his flute. 64, he has a wonderful excellence of beauty which cannot be rivaled anywhere in the creation. Adding to the list these 4 exceptional qualities of Krishna, it is to be understood that the aggregate number of qualities of Krishna is 64. Srila Rupa Goswami has attempted to give evidences from various scriptures about all 64 qualities present in the person of the Supreme Lord. Can you name all 64? Number 1, beautiful bodily features. Any comparison of the different parts of the Lord's body to different material objects cannot factually be a complete comparison. Ordinary persons who cannot understand how exalted are the bodily features of the Lord are simply given a chance to understand by a material comparison. It is said that Krishna's face is as beautiful as the moon. His thighs are powerful, just like the trunks of elephants. His arms are just like 2 pillars. His palms are expanded like lotus flowers. His chest is just like a doorway. His hips are dens, and the middle of his body is a terrace. Auspicious characteristics. There are certain characteristics of different limbs which are considered to be very auspicious and are fully present in the body of the Lord. In this connection, one friend of Nanda Maharaj, speaking about Lord Krishna's auspicious bodily symptoms, said, "My dear king of the cowherds, I can find 32 auspicious symptoms on the body of your son. I'm wondering how this boy could have taken birth in a family of cowherd men." Generally, when Lord Krishna appears, he does so in a family of kshatriyas, as did kings, as did Lord Ramachandra, and sometimes in a family of brahmanas. But Krishna accepted the role of son of Maharaj Nanda, despite the fact that Nanda belonged to the Vaishya community. The business of the Vaishya community is trade, commerce, and the protection of cows. Therefore, his friend, who may have been born into a Brahmana family, expressed his wonder at how such an exalted child could take birth in a family of Vaishyas. Anyway, he pointed out the auspicious signs on the body of Krishna to the boy's foster father. Who's his foster father? He's a foster child. He continued, "This boy has a reddish luster in 7 places: his eyes, the ends of his hands, the ends of his legs, his palate, his lips, his tongue, and his nails. A reddish luster in these seven places is considered to be auspicious. Three parts of his body are very broad, his waist, forehead, and chest. Three parts of his body are short, his neck, thighs, and genitals. Three parts of his body are very deep, his voice, intelligence, and navel. There are highness in five parts of his body, his nose, arms, eye, ears, forehead, and thighs. In five parts of his body there is fineness, his skin, the hairs on his head, and the other parts of his body. His teeth and his fingertips, the aggregate of all these bodily features is manifest only in the bodies of great personalities. Whenever we go to Jagannath Puri, at Tota Gopinath, there's a tree outside. Madhavananda always stops there to show us that if you feel the leaf on that tree, it's very soft. So this, they say, there in Puri, this is how Krishna's skin feels. Very soft, it's delicate. The fate lines on the palm are also considered to be auspicious bodily symptoms. In this connection, one old gopi informed King Nanda, "Your son possesses various wonderful fate lines on his palms. There are the signs of lotus flowers and wheels on his palms, and on his soles there are the signs of a flag, a thunderbolt, a fish, a rod for controlling elephants, and a lotus flower. Please observe how auspicious these signs are." Pleasing. Beautiful bodily features which automatically attract the eyes are called ruchira. Called what?
Ruchira.
Pleasing. Krishna possesses this attractive feature of ruchira in his personal features. In the third canto, second chapter, verse 13 of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a statement about this. The Supreme Personality of Godhead in his pleasing dress appeared at the scene of the sacrificial arena where King Yudhishthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. All important personalities from different parts of the universe had been invited to the sacrificial arena. And all of them, upon beholding Krishna there, considered that the Creator had ended all of his craftsmanship in the creation of this particular body of Krishna. It is said that the transcendental body of Krishna resembles the lotus flower in eight parts, namely his face, his two eyes, his two hands, his navel, and his two feet. The gopis and inhabitants of Vrindavan used to see the luster of lotus flowers everywhere, and they could hardly withdraw their eyes from such a vision. Somebody give me a verse from Queen Kunti about the lotus. Take the microphone. Where are all the microphones, by the way? On one scale of 1 to 10, 10 being full credit, you get 0.005 unless you're in the microphone.
Honey.
Nama Pankacha Nabaya, Nama Pankacha Maline. Nama Pankacha Netraya, Namaste Pankajangraye.
Can you tell us a little bit, whatever you know about that verse, can you tell us? Yeah.
Well, Kunti Devi is praising Krishna that different parts of his body are beautiful like a lotus. Nama Pankacha Nabaya, that is the navel. She starts off at the navel. She doesn't want to speak about the feet first because she's the auntie, so it would be a little embarrassing for him. And then she's glorifying his lotus feet. And then she says also he has a lotus smile. His face is like a lotus flower. And he's always adorned by a garland of lotuses. So a lotus is considered to be the emblem of all beauty, the most beautiful of all flowers.
Very good. Let's see the verse. Put it up there, please. Nama Pankaja Nabaya, Nama Pankaja Malini, Nama Pankaja Nitraya, Namaste Pankajangriya. That's 1-8-21. 1-8-21. I'll say, please repeat. Namapankajanabhaya. Namapankajamaline. Namapankajanetraya. Namaste pankajangraye. Namaha. All respectful obeisances. Pankajanabhaya. Unto the Lord who has a specific depression resembling a lotus flower in the center of his abdomen. Namaha. Obeisances. Pankajamaline. One who is always decorated with a garland of lotus flowers. Namaha. Obeisances. Pankajanetraya. One whose glance is as cooling as a lotus flower. Namahate. Respectful obeisances unto you. Pankajanangraye. Unto you, the soles of whose feet are engraved with lotus flowers, and who are therefore said to possess lotus feet. Translation, my respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, whose glance is as cool as the lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses. Purport. Here are some of the specific symbolical marks on the spiritual body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which distinguish his body from the bodies of all others. They are all special features of the body of the Lord. The Lord may appear as one of us, but he is always distinct by his specific bodily features. Srimati Kunti claims herself unfit to see the Lord because of her being a woman. This is claimed because women, Shudras, the lower class, and the Dvijabandhus, or the wretched descendants of the higher three classes, are unfit by intelligence to understand transcendental subject matter concerning the spiritual name, fame, attributes, form, etc. of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Such persons, although they are unfit to enter into the spiritual affairs of the Lord, can see him as the Archavigraha, who descends to the material world just to distribute favors to the fallen souls, including the above-mentioned women, Shudras, and Dvijabandhus. Because such fallen souls cannot see anything beyond matter, the Lord condescends to enter into each and every one of the innumerable universes as a Garbhadakshai Vishnu, who grows a lotus stem from the lotus-like depression in the center of his transcendental abdomen. And thus Brahma, the first living being in the universe, is born. Therefore the Lord is known as the Pankajanabhi. What is he known as?
Pankajanabhi.
The Pankajanabhi Lord accepts the Archavigraha, his transcendental form, in different elements, namely a form within the mind, a form made of wood, a form made of earth, a form made of metal, a form made of jewel, a form made of paint, a form drawn in the sand, etc. All such forms of the Lord are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers. And there should be a soothing atmosphere in the temple of worship to attract the burning attention of the non-devotees always engaged in material wranglings. The meditators worship a form within the mind. Therefore, the Lord is merciful even to the women, Shudras, and Dvijabandhus, provided they agree to visit the temple of worship in different forms made for them. Such temple visitors are not idolaters, as alleged by some men with a poor fund of knowledge. All the great acharyas establish such temples of worship in all places just to favor the less intelligent, and one should not pose himself as transcending the stage of temple worship while one is actually in the category of the Shudras and the women or less. One should begin to see the Lord from his lotus feet, gradually rising to the thighs, waist, chest, and face. One should not try to look at the face of the Lord without being accustomed to seeing the lotus feet of the Lord. Srimati Kunti, because of her being the aunt of the Lord, did not begin to see the Lord from the lotus feet because the Lord might feel ashamed. And thus Kunti Devi, just to save a painful situation for the Lord, began to see the Lord just above his lotus feet. That is, from the waist of the Lord, gradually rising to the face and then down to the lotus feet. In the round, everything there is in order. And back to the nectar devotion, please. Number four, effulgent. The effulgence pervading the universe is considered to be the rays of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Verse, please, from Sri Brahma Samhita. Yasya prabha prabha bhato jagadanda koti koti shrishesha vasudari vibhuti binam tad brahma nishkalam anantam ashesha bhutam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Put it up, please. Brahma Samhita. What chapter? Okay, that's an easy one. Now the verse number. Verse number? Yasya prabha prabha bhato jagadanda koti koti shashesha vasudva dadi viputi binam tat brahm. 40. Yonju. Okay. Yeah, together, number 40. Yasya prabha prabha bhato jagadanda koti koti shrishesha vasudari vibhuti binam tad brahma nishkalam anantam ashesha bhutam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Translation and purport, please. Translation together. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose effulgence is the source of the non-differentiated Brahman mentioned in the Upanishads. Being differentiated from the infinity of glories of the mundane universe appears as the indivisible, infinite, limitless truth. Purport. We're just fascinated by seeing how fast he can go. We should have an Olympics for this activity some weekend. Ramananda would win, though. Purport. The mundane universe. Created by Maya, is one of the infinite external manifestations accommodating space, time, and gross things. The impersonal aspect of Godhead, the non-differentiated Brahman, is far above this principle of mundane creation. But even the non-differentiated Brahman is only the external effulgence emanating from the boundary wall of the transcendental realm of Vaikuntha, displaying the chaikhandrantal glory of Godhead, of Govinda. The non-differentiated Brahman is indivisible, hence is only one without, hence is also one without a second, and is the infinite and residual entity. And now, tell me where in the Bhagavad Gita Krishna talks about his effulgence. Go ahead, take a shot. Which one is it? 14? 14.26?
26.
No, 27. Are you meditating on the effulgence of the Lord? Okay. I'll say, please repeat. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Amritasya vayasya cha. Shashvatasya chitarmasya. Sukasyai kantikasya cha. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Amritasya vayasya cha. Shashvatasya chitarmasya. Sukasyai kantikasya cha. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Amritasya vayasya cha. Shashvatasya chitarmasya. Sukasyai kantikasya cha. Brahmanaha. Of the impersonal Brahma Jyotir. He Certainly.
Certainly.
Pratishtha,
the rest.
Aham,
I am.
Amritasya,
of the immortal.
Avyayasya,
of the imperishable.
Cha, also. Shashvatasya,
of the eternal.
Cha,
and
Dharmasya,
of the constitutional position.
Sukasya,
of happiness.
Aikantikasya,
ultimate.
Aikantikasya,
ultimate.
Aikantikasya,
ultimate.
And if I was going to say ultimate in Sanskrit, what would I say?
Aikantikasya.
Cha. Also, translation. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. Purport. The constitution of Brahman is immortality, imperishability, eternity, and happiness. Brahman is the beginning of transcendental realization. Paramatma, the Supersoul, is the middle, the second stage in transcendental realization, and the Supreme Personality of God, it is the ultimate realization of the Absolute Truth. Therefore, both Paramatma and the impersonal Brahman are within the Supreme Person. Someone give me a verse from the first canto, second chapter, 11th
verse.
Which describes this trinity.
Vadanti tat tattva idas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabjate.
Everyone else knows it, say it. Vadanti tat tattva idas tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabjate. It is explained in the seventh chapter that the material nature is the manifestation of the inferior energy of the Supreme Lord. The Lord impregnates the inferior material nature with fragments of the superior nature, and that is the spiritual touch in the material nature. When a living entity conditioned by this material nature begins the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, he elevates himself from the position of material existence and gradually rises up to the Brahman conception of the Supreme. How does he do that? When a living entity conditioned by this material nature begins the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, he elevates himself from the position of material existence and gradually rises up to the Brahman conception that's supreme. That's a pretty important sentence. Can we hear it again? When a living entity conditioned by this material nature begins the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, he elevates himself from the position of material existence and gradually rises up to the Brahman conception of the Supreme. So someone give me an idea of what it means to begin the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, but back it up with some shastric evidence. We need Sanskrit. Go ahead. Yes.
Gaining a little faith in the association of the devotees, Adau Shraddhat Daksadu. It's found in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu.
Hold that a little closer.
Gaining a little faith in the association of the devotees. Adau Shraddhat Daksadu.
Can you say more about that?
Well, somebody will gain a little bit of interest and curiosity, and they find value in associating with devotees, hearing more about Krishna consciousness. And so they come to a place like this.
Nice. And so you're talking about how that's how they begin their cultivation.
That's right.
Shraddha, what does it mean, cultivation? Oh, we have mic up here. Well, so while she's looking for it, we can say this together. Adau Shraddha tata sadhu sangha ta bhajana kriya tato narta nivriti syat tato nishta ruchis tata ata saktis tato bhavas tata prema vyadanshati sada kanam ayam premna praturbhave bhavet kramaha. Translation is, in the beginning there must be faith. Then one becomes interested in associating with pure devotees. Thereafter, one is initiated by the spiritual master and executes the regulative principles under his orders. Thus, one is freed from all unwanted habits and becomes firmly fixed in devotional service. Thereafter, one develops taste and attachment. This is the way of sadhana bhakti, the execution of devotional service according to the regulative principles. Gradually, emotions intensify, and finally, there is an awakening of love. This is the gradual development of love of Godhead for the devotee interested in Krishna consciousness. Shraddha?
Cultivation is a noun, three meanings for that. The action of cultivating land or the state of being cultivated, the cultivation of crops. For example, the economy was based largely on rice cultivation. Number two, the process of trying to acquire...
That must be Bengal. Okay, go ahead.
The process of trying to acquire or develop a quality or skill. For example, the cultivation of good staff management relationships.
Good sadhana? I thought you said good sadhana.
Yeah, good sadhana.
Okay.
And then third is refinement and good education. For example, a man of cultivation and taste. And the origin of the word cultivate is in the middle 17th century from the medieval Latin cultivat.
That's wealth and taste. Not, okay, go ahead.
So from the Latin cultivat, which means prepared for crops.
Say it again.
Mid-17th century, from medieval Latin cultivat, which means prepared for crops.
Isn't that nice? Prepared for crops. So it fits very well with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's metaphor of devotional service being a garden, and this bhakti is a seed and it must be watered. Yes. Give him the mic. Please submit your evidence to the court. He wants, tell him the verse so he can put it up.
Bhagavad Gita 14.26.
14.26. Go ahead.
माम च यो अव्यभिचारेण भक्ति योगेन सेवते स गुणान स समति त्यान एतान ब्रह्मभूयाय कल्पते. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the mode of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman.
Purport. This verse is a reply to Arjuna's third question. What is the means of attaining to the transcendental position? As explained before, the material world is acting under the spell of the modes of material nature. One should not be disturbed by the activities of the modes of nature. Instead of putting his consciousness into such activities, he may transfer his consciousness to Krishna activities. Krishna activities are known as bhakti yoga, always acting for Krishna. This includes not only Krishna, but his different plenary expansions such as Rama and Narayan. He has innumerable expansions. One who is engaged in the service of any of the forms of Krishna or his plenary expansions is considered to be transcendentally situated. One should also note that all the forms of Krishna are fully transcendental, blissful, full of knowledge, and eternal. Such personalities of Godhead are omnipotent and omniscient, and they possess all transcendental qualities. If one engages himself in the service of Krishna or his plenary expansions with unfailing determination, although these modes of material nature are very difficult to overcome, one can overcome them easily. This has already been explained in the seventh chapter. One who surrenders unto Krishna at once surmounts the influence of the modes of material nature. To be in Krishna consciousness or in devotional service means to acquire equality with Krishna. The Lord says that his nature is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge, and the living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme, as gold particles are part of a gold mine. Thus, the living entity in his spiritual position is as good as gold, as good as Krishna in quality. The difference of individuality continues, otherwise there would be no question of bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga means that the Lord is there, the devotee is there, and the activity of exchange of love between the Lord and his devotee is there. Therefore, the individuality of two persons is present in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual person. Otherwise, there would be no meaning to bhakti yoga. If one is not situated in the same transcendental position with the Lord, one cannot serve the Supreme Lord. To be a personal assistant to a king, one must acquire the qualifications. Thus, the qualification is to become Brahman, or freed from all material contamination. It is said in the Vedic literature, Brahmaiva san brahmapyeti, one can attain the supreme Brahman by becoming Brahman. By attainment, this means that one must qualitatively become one with Brahman. By attainment of Brahman, one does not lose his eternal Brahman identity as an individual soul. And now we'll take a few reflections. Anything you've heard so far that's stuck in your mind that you want to reflect back? Harinama.
I was struck by the fact that it says Krishna is self-controlled. And I thought of a few things, that he breaks pots, doesn't seem to be so self-controlled. He steals butter. He steals clothes of his girlfriends. And he pinches babies when they're asleep if he can't find any butter to steal. He eats dirt. So how is it possible we call him self-controlled?
He's an enigma. What else?
Hare Krishna Guruji, one thing that caught my attention in the purport was, you know, it says bhakti yoga and it says always act for Krishna. I'm speaking for myself. I don't do that under all circumstances. Obviously, there is a conflict there, right? I mean, what do I do? Do this or do that? So how do you, what is your suggestion? Do we need to reach to Brahman stage to get into that situation where you always act for Krishna, or like, when do we?
Should act according to one's qualification, as mentioned by Krishna in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sway Swayari Kariya Nishta, Saguna Parikirtita, Viparyastu Dosha Syad. He says that when one acts according to one's qualification, it's a good quality. And the opposite, viparyo to dosha syat, it's if one tries to do something which is not according to one's qualification, then he said this is a fault. And in the Gita 12th chapter, Krishna gives various options for people to think of him. One is that you think of him all day long. This requires love. When you love somebody, you can't stop thinking about them, no matter what's going on around you. And then he said, if you can't do that, then you should follow the process of Vaidhi Bhakti. And that way you'll develop a desire to think of me always, or you'll come to that position. If you can't do that, then you should work for me, which means you should do your work and then give some of the proceeds to help spread Krishna consciousness. If you can't do that, you should simply work for some charitable cause. And then he gives us a last option. If you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation. And better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. It is mentioned in the many verses, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, that one should constantly think of Krishna. One should constantly worship the Bhagavatam by hearing. However, our acharyas has said that for beginners, this is not to be taken literally. Because if we were to impose this as a literal principle, then people would be discouraged and go away. Because who can do that? Therefore, they say it means at least daily. For some time, you should connect to the process of devotional service. So generally, devotees at various stages of their lives have more or less opportunity to do that. And according to their development, they have more or less taste to do that. And so if you take advantage of the time that you have, when you have it, and the amount of taste that you have right now for engaging those activities, and you do it to the best of your ability, then you'll grow from there. How else can you grow except from where you are right now? And step by step, one then makes advancement in the process of devotional service.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What else did you hear? What other points would you like to make? Yes.
So in one of the purports, I don't remember exactly because there were so many purports, but it was a very small point that I was noticing in Prabhupada's language. He had said that the Lord condescendingly comes to this world to deliver souls. And it struck me because condescendingly has such a negative connotation. And I was looking at what the word actually meant. It literally means to come down to that level and to bring oneself to that level in order for it to do a good cause. And I was just thinking that aspect of the Supreme Lord, that he's willing to give up all these opulences to come to our level. And I thought that word and the whole sentence was very apt.
It's very similar to the word avatar, which means to descend from a higher level to a lower level. And one may ask, how is it that one could know the Supreme if I'm limited? Then the answer is that the Lord's unlimited, he's omniscient, he's omnipotent, so he has the prerogative to reveal himself to the limited if he so chooses. Therefore, one of the verses in the Puranas says, Nayamatma pravachanena labhyo na medaya na bahuna shrutena yami vaisha vrinirte tena labhyas tashyaisha esha vrinirte tanun swam, which means that you cannot attain the Supreme with your own powers. Nayamatma pravachanena, you may be an expert speaker, but it doesn't mean that you can see God. Namedhaya, you may be very intelligent. Nabahuna, shutena. You may know many different kinds of shastras and hear them again and again. But ultimately, Krishna reveals himself to one whom he chooses. He's got that prerogative. He can condescend to one's level and present. So therefore, so much in bhakti is about developing one's attitude, loving attitude towards Krishna, so that he'll want to reveal himself. And again, we hear the verse, Sata Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Graham Indriye Swayam Seva Mukhi Hijivado Swayam Eva Spuratyada, which means that this process of bhakti begins by rendering service with the tongue. And when one renders service with the tongue, then Krishna will feel compelled to reveal himself to the devotee. Other reflections?
Thank you. So Maharaj, I was looking up the origin of the word condescend.
Yes.
And it's very interesting. It's from Middle English and from the Old French, condescendere. And from ecclesiastical Latin, condescendere, and the word is coming from two words, con, which means together, and descendere means to descend. So ultimately, doesn't have a negative thing there. I was thinking pros and con, like con is always negative.
So we know it's such a condescending.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. We use it in such a negative way. Yeah.
Yeah, and what are the usages that it mentions?
Yeah. We'll be waiting for 20 minutes before she condescends to appear. So that's an example they have given. And condescending smile. She thought the teachers were arrogant and condescending. So always negative.
So yeah. There's a negative.
So I wonder why, it has such a positive origin and it somehow turned negative down the line.
Yeah, but the principle that we can remember is how Krishna's coming down. It's a descending process. He condescends. What else did you hear?
So Maharaj, when we were reading from the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 19, I think, where it was talking about equanimity.
519. Yeah. talking about?
It was talking about equanimity, and it said that a person who is, reaches that stage has actually crossed over the birth and death cycle. So
those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. What was it about that that attracted you?
I was thinking about the power of being, you know, equanimous. That once you reach that stage, I mean, even you are beyond the cycle of birth and death.
Equanimity of mind, as mentioned above, is the sign of self-realization. Those who have actually attained to such a stage should be considered to have conquered material conditions, specifically birth and death. Oh, by the way, you conquered birth and death. As long as one identifies with this body, he is considered a conditioned soul. But as soon as he is elevated to the stage of equanimity through realization of self, he is liberated from conditional life. In other words, he is no longer subject to take birth in the material world, but can enter into the spiritual sky after his death. The Lord is flawless because he is without attraction or hatred. Similarly, when a living entity is without attraction or hatred, he also becomes flawless and eligible to enter into the spiritual sky. Such persons are to be considered already liberated, and their symptoms are described below. I would be remiss if I didn't ask Satyadev Prabhu to comment on this verse. Please get him a microphone as soon as possible.
Hare Krishna.
Let's welcome Satyadev Prabhu back to ISV. Haribo! Fresh back from China, where he's making a big splash. Hare Krishna. A very successful tour he made with Havi Prabhu. The two of them traveled throughout China and created quite a stir over there.
Is that
people,
right?
People never be the same.
Yeah, Havi's kirtan is so special. We have to bring him here, I think. He has that, it's like a demigod. He is a demigod.
Well, his daughter's coming.
Yeah. Oh.
Danya and Bali are coming. So it's just like I mentioned the other day, before you see the sun, you see the sun rise. So before we see Havi, we're going to see Danya. We'll see Danya and Bali before we see Havi. But we'll make a prayer. Dear Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan, if you so desire, please make Havi come out here so we can have his association. And he can rock the Bay Area with his beautiful kirtan and his exalted association. Thank you for considering our request. Please also send all his children out here too, if you so desire. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Okay, Satyadev Prabhu, go right ahead.
The last engagement we had in Beijing. Beijing is the first city we went to, and we had three outside engagements. So, the last one we went to there was a company who had sound therapy. So they had all these different types of sounds you could listen to, like that would equalize the different halves of your brain and. And all these different contraptions. So there was a nice group of people there. And at the end of the program, there was questions and answers. And one gentleman in the audience, he was a film producer. So he asked Havi Prabhu this question. He said, most of the people there were not devotees. And they all had a really amazing experience in the kirtan. And so this very smart gentleman, he asked, he said, so what is it that really happened here? Was it the mantra or was it the music that caused me to have such a wonderful experience? And then Havi Prabhu, he spontaneously began to sing a verse from The Sound of Music. I can't.
The hills are alive with the sound of music.
But it was more like there's a song in there about taking medicine. A little bit of sugar helps the medicine go down. And so he played it on the piano, and I thought it was a great answer, that music, especially when it's presented well, it has the ability to open the heart, and then the mantra goes in there, the medicine can go in there, and then create a transcendental experience. So that was repeated again and again wherever we went. Didn't matter the audience, whether they were devotees, non-devotees, similar experience. So it was wonderful time. Even though he was sick most of the time, you'd never know it. He was congested and had a sore throat, but his voice was as beautiful as ever. And so he was a real trooper, and he pushed through all the difficulties. And we did a lot of traveling. It was exhausting at time, driving. And in Beijing, sometimes you'd have to drive 2 hours in traffic to get to a program, and so it just wasn't the program. Anyway, it went on really nice, and I was just fortunate to be there. So I'm glad all the devotees and non-devotees had an opportunity to have that experience. I hope they'll come back, but it was good, even if just for that. As far as this verse goes, those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. It made me think of the question that the Prabhu asked related to Prabhupada's purport, where Prabhupada mentions how that the beginning of attaining Brahman is a cultivation. And then I thought of the verse Atato Brahma Jigansa. And so when every human being has this potential for self-realization, but it doesn't actually begin until one inquires or one is interested. And that takes according to Krishna, it takes many births, right? Bahunam jamanam ante. Manushyanam sahasresu. And so, but there, it's just the nature of the material world, and it's the nature of consciousness that, the living entity's nature is Brahman, and the material world's an incompatible situation. So eventually one comes to a point of saying, isn't there something more? And that's the beginning of leaving, ego-based consciousness to entering, heart-based or transcendental consciousness or Brahman consciousness. So when one begins to inquire, then one starts a process of turning away from looking outside to looking inside. And once that process begins, lo and behold, one discovers what's inside, which is that silent witnessing presence, or the Brahman nature of the living being. And when one begins to discover that, then even though there's the conditions of birth and death, or happiness and distress, a person who's on the path of self-realization begins to experience that there's something that's changing, but there's something that's not. And that which is changing is the comings and goings of the mind, the happiness and the distress, but then there's that part of oneself that's noticing it all. That's the witness, that's not changing, that's not coming or going. And in that, one discovers equanimity. That part that's not affected, even when the mind is feeling joyful or not feeling joyful. And then Krishna says, when one realizes that, then one's established in equanimity. And It doesn't mean that there's no more happiness and distress. It's just that it means that one is not affected by it anymore or not disturbed. You know, matra sparsha stakuntiya sitoshna sukha dukkha da agama pahino nityas tamstatikshas vabharata, that happiness and distress come and go like winters and summer seasons, and one must, and that arises from sense perception. So the nature of the body and the mind is it's going to enjoy pleasure and not enjoy pain and react to that. But if one is able to learn the art of tolerating that without being disturbed, sometimes we hear tolerance as we think that means that we're just bearing the problem, bearing the suffering, but actually we're still disturbed. So then one is not free. But if one can observe that, oh, I'm disturbed, oh, there's disturbance, there's suffering, and one can admit that, and then one can begin to see that there's also that part of myself that's not disturbed, that's witnessing it, that's actually okay, that's always okay, especially in the moment. Right? Only when we venture into the mind and into the past and the future is that we feel separation and we don't feel okay. So that process of that begins with self-inquiry, just being interested, being able to ask the question, isn't there something more than this? And it all begins from that. If one has interest, then the Lord within the heart sees, oh, this person's wants to wake up, and then he makes arrangements.
Speaking of waking up, thank you very much. That reminded me of that post you put up today, and the definition of birth and death given by Krishna to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Do you have that? 11:22:39. Is what is birth and death anyway? When we talk about conquering birth and death and so forth, here are the definitions. When the living entity passes from the present body to the next body, which is created by his own karma, he becomes absorbed in the pleasurable and painful sensations of the new body and completely forgets the experience of the previous body. This total forgetfulness of one's previous material identity, which comes about for one reason or another, is called death. Purport. Depending on one's karma or fruit of activities, one may achieve a beautiful, wealthy, or powerful body, or be degraded to abominable condition of life. Taking birth in heaven or in hell, the living entity learns to completely identify his ego with a new body and thus becomes absorbed in the pleasure, fear, opulence, or suffering of the new body, completely forgetting the experiences of the previous body. Death occurs when the specific karma allotted to a physical body is finished. Since that particular body's karma is used up, it can no longer act upon one's mind. In that way, one forgets the previous body. The new body is created by nature so that one can experience the karma currently in effect. Consequently, one's entire consciousness becomes absorbed in one's current body in order that one can fully experience the results of his previous activities. Because the living entity falsely identifies himself as the body, bodily death is experienced as death of the soul. Actually, however, the soul is eternal and is never subject to creation or annihilation. This analytical knowledge of self-realization is easily understood in Krishna consciousness. It's not commonly known, though. And let's see the other definition. Is the next one, please? O most charitable Uddhava, this is Krishna speaking. What is called birth is simply a person's total identification with a new body. One accepts the new body just as one completely accepts the experience of a dream or a fantasy as reality. Purport: identification with one's material body surpasses the mere affection and attachment one feels for the bodies of relatives or friends. The word sarvabhavena here shows that one totally accepts the material body to be oneself, just as one completely accepts the experience of a dream as real. Mere imagination without practical action is called a daydream. The mental concoction that occurs in a sleeping state is called a dream. Our identification with our own body and our own blind acceptance of bodily relationships as permanent constitute a prolonged form of dreaming or fantasy in which one imagines oneself to be separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The term birth, therefore, does not refer to the generation of a new entity, but to the blind acceptance by the spirit soul of a new material body. Talk about blind acceptance. I mean, do you like that?
Yes.
You like it too much?
Yes.
Good. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I had a question, which was a follow-up from, I think, Brahma Bhuyai Kalpate purport, the 14.26. In that, Prabhupada mentions, or maybe the equanimity verse. So he mentions, whoever has achieved equanimity is fit to be liberated or is already liberated. However, in Srimad Bhagavatam, I think Kapil Dev tells his mother that Priti na yavat mai vasudeva na muchyate deha yogena tavat. So, or in other words, until you achieve love for me, Vasudev, you cannot be freed from the material body. So, I was just trying to thinking how by just achieving equanimity one can be liberated, because that doesn't seem to be the case. One can be Uttam Adhikari and you can have equanimity, but that doesn't mean you are freed from material life.
Well, there are different levels of liberation. And of course, from the perspective of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the only situation that constitutes true liberation is when one again manifests one's spiritual body, svarupena vyavastitihi. The modes of material nature no longer affect the person. He gives up the material body and his spiritual body is again manifested. And as mentioned by the demigods to Lord Krishna within the womb, that yene ravindaksha vimuktamani nastvayasta bhavada vashuddha buddhaya aruya krishnena paramparam tatapatantyato nadrita yushmanangrayaha, that until one comes to the position of reestablishing relationship with Krishna, then whatever kind of liberation one attains will be short-lived, because it won't be able to completely satisfy the self, and one could fall down from that situation. So throughout the Gita, including in the 8th chapter, we find that yogis who depart the world during the light and so forth, at the right time, they attain some kind of liberation. But Prabhupada explains in a purport, but this is not ultimate liberation. It's a liberation of a temporary nature. But here we're talking in context of devotional service and the kinds of equanimity that one attains is also elaborated upon as we go further in the Gita, that one becomes a lover of Krishna. And because of that, one develops all the good qualities. This is also confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, yasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvar gunastatra samasite sura harava bhakta sukuto mahadguna manorati nasati dhavato bihi, that by performing devotional service, that one naturally develops all the good qualities including equanimity and so forth. We can look at this again. You can show me the specific place. Go ahead, down.
Prabhu, it's at the very bottom, I think. No.
You have to condescend more.
I can come back to this, but I saw it somewhere. It's here.
Yeah, there may be individual statements like that, but if you take it in the overall context, for instance, even if we're looking at the bottom, one can attain the Supreme Brahman by becoming Brahman. So someone can take that and say, oh, that means that we should merge into Brahman. This one sentence does not give the full context. This means one must be qualitatively become one with Brahman. But by attainment of Brahman, one does not lose his eternal Brahman identity as an individual soul. So extra information is necessary besides the point about equanimity giving one liberation. But Satyadev Prabhu explained it also as a technicality. We also heard it from what is birth and what is death. Those who are aware of the fact that they're a spiritual soul and they're not their body, observe the comings and goings and the workings of the body, as we read earlier in chapter 5, naiva kinchit karomiti yukto manyeta tatvirit paschan shrinvan sprasan jigran ashnan gachan swapan swachan pralapan vishranan grinnan unvishan nimishan api indriyan indriyateshu vartanta iti dharayan. That the person who's liberated, naiva kinchit karomiti, he never identifies with the body, even though it's moving in different ways. He sees it going on, but he doesn't identify with it. And that's a preliminary description of the perfection of life. There's also a postgraduate understanding. Okay. Yes.
So many qualities of Krishna, especially like how the Prabhu was asking how he's self-controlled. And I was also surprised to see that he is also shy, because so many other qualities like that, and which seems contradictory, but seems to be makes the person absolute in Krishna consciousness. And all the other qualities that are mentioned, I was just thinking how the people in corporate world today talk about thought leadership. And they focus so much on these qualities, but Krishna has in full. And how Prabhupada says that by becoming a devotee, all these qualities automatically become manifest. And one need not do any external endeavor to develop these divine qualities. I was just thinking.
Yeah. Krishna's described, he's the reservoir of all qualities and all rasas. And he relates to his devotees in various ways. Dhir Lalita, Dhir Prashanta, Dhirodatta describe various aspects of his personality, which also seem to be contradictory. This is really the subject of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is showing how he accommodates loving exchanges with all his devotees. And to do that, he has to be the reservoir of all rasa. Yes, please. Microphone is just now coming.
And just to this Prabhu's question about equanimity and liberation and devotional service, and how does that work together? It is possible for one to realize that one is spirit soul, but has not awakened to the point that he understands that there's superior, you know, source to his being. Just like, you know, in the case of Sukadeva Goswami or the four Kumaras, they were equanimous to the material nature because they understood that they were pure spirit souls. But they hadn't realized their dependency upon the Supreme Lord. And then there's some sense, you know, that the soul, when it comes into the contact with the material world, its nature to serve the Lord, the spontaneous nature, becomes perverted. And due to the influence of material nature, there is some aversion towards God. And so this aversion manifests even sometimes in souls that are almost liberated, or they realize, I'm pure consciousness, I'm not this material body, but they never ask the question, well, how did I ever forget it? What is that? What is this energy that's causing me, you know, that caused me to forget my spiritual nature? They don't have that sense of there's something superior to themselves. So even though they're equanimous, they're not really fully liberated, and they can't engage, you know, in bhakti, because they don't have any faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They don't even have enough spiritual intelligence to ask the question, you know, how did I forget? How did I get in this situation in the first place? But that doesn't mean that as one engages in bhakti, one doesn't become first qualified to understand that I'm Brahman, that I'm spirit by nature, and that I'm joyful by nature, and that I'm not the comings and goings of the body or the mind, and especially the mind. We talk a lot about not identifying with the body, but the identification with the mind is why we identify with the body, and we're absorbed in this continuous movie that's going on in our head, captured by that. And as long as we're captured by that, we don't notice that part of ourself that's actually always been free, always been liberated, always been eternal and joyful. So I think maybe that this is the area where maybe there's some confusion. So it's possible to be equanimous but not be liberated as a devotee. But it's not possible to be a devotee and not be liberated.
And we find that also, thank you.
So be Brahma Bhuta.
You find that Brahma Bhuta is in this Shanta stage, Shanta Ras, is foundational to higher states of liberation, which mean developing one's relationship with Krishna into Dasya Ras, Sakya Ras, Vatsalya Madhurya. This is described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his teachings to Rupa and Sanatana, and also in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And also in the verse, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, na shochatina kankshatik, samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. From this position of equanimity, you know, he's seeing all living entities equally, and feeling the oneness of all life as coming from one origin and so forth. From that position, mad bhaktim labhate param, actually this is the threshold Prabhupada describes. One enters into bhakti from this position. At the same time, Prabhupada was directly asked the question, do we have to progress through the stages when Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, to come to Bhagavan, do we have to go through all stages? And Prabhupada said that generally this is what happens. He said, but with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you are elevated very quickly and directly to Bhagavan realization. He said this is his special mercy when he gives the process of Sankirtan devotional service. One very quickly understands Bhagavan, which includes also Paramatma and Brahman. Gaur Premanande Haribo. Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman, hey, Natchari Armarman, Natchari Armarman.
Natchare yaar marman, natchare yaar marman.